It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Welcome to Money for Lunch. Being joined today by a special guest. It's the anniversary of 9/11, and this is kind of a fitting, kind of fitting segment or show for our brave men and women. So I want to start it off. I want to start off today's quote of the day with this quote: "We could never learn to be brave and patient if the world, if there were only joy in the world. We could never learn to be brave and patient if there were only joy in the world." And that is by the late, great Helen Keller. And with that, let's get this party started. My guest today is Chris Newsom. Chris Newsom is as a VP of Canada Acquisition. Chris's primary role at Recruit Military is to aggregate and support America's military men, women, and their families with career access and professional development resources. Following the attacks of America on September 11, 2001, Chris joined the U.S. Army's illustrious 82nd Airborne Division. Chris was shipped to Fort Benning, Georgia, to complete basic training and advanced training in Army Airborne School. Within a month of arriving at Fort Bragg, Chris was sent on his first deployment in support of Operation Enduring Freedom. Over his four-year span of military service, Chris would complete three combat tours, adding two tours to Iraq in support of Operation Iraqi Freedom. Throughout his time with the 82nd Airborne Division, Chris was placed in numerous leadership roles, working his way to the rank of sergeant and leading fellow paratroopers through the war-torn streets of the Middle East. Chris Newsom, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thank you very much for having me on this morning, Bert.
All right, so I want to talk about this. How did the whole Recruit Military come about? Talk about, how Recruit Military came about and what did you guys do?
Yeah, absolutely. So Recruit Military started 20 years ago. 20 years ago to the date, as of just maybe 3 months ago, we just celebrated our 20-year anniversary. And the way that the organization started back in 1998, it was founded by a Marine captain. He was an artillery captain, and he partnered up with a fellow Marine that he met on recruiting duty while stationed in Cincinnati, Ohio. Neither of which were from Cincinnati, Ohio. This just so happened to be their last duty station. And upon completion of their term of service, when they both transitioned over to the civilian side, they entered into the human capital realm, meaning recruiting in general for organizations. And the way that the organization started was with a focus on junior military officers, which is where a lot of organizations within our industry operate within. There's a focus on the junior military officer side because they tend to be very easy to plug and play leadership oriented candidates, and that's the way the company started and ran and operated for a handful of years. But relatively quickly, the organization and the senior leadership, that is Drew Myers, Larry Slagle, and a few other players, they realized that they were missing out on a majority of the military, and that's the enlisted side. That, that's the guys and gals that were like myself. You know, when I transitioned, as you mentioned, I was a sergeant, a junior non-commissioned officer, and Recruit Military quickly evolved into a all-encompassing full-service military to civilian recruiting firm. So instead of focusing on, again, that small sliver of the pie, which was the junior military officer type of candidates that we were placing for organizations that were demanding that type of talent, we expanded into all military personnel. So, we went from placement services where an organization could reach out to us and say, hey, Recruit Military, we're looking for a mechanical engineer with a master's degree that has, you know, some experience running a team. We could help them find that candidate. We would place that candidate for them, and that candidate would be a military serviceman or woman. With the evolution and expanding into the enlisted side of the military community, we expanded the repertoire of services that we could offer to corporate America by, you know, starting to incorporate career fairs. We have a very robust job board that has about 1.4 million military servicemen and women job seekers, a 250,000 active opportunities that are posted at any point in time. And again, this evolution just kind of it went from us being a one-trick pony, if you will, where we were just placing those junior military officers, to now where we are today. We can cater to literally just about any organization's needs. It doesn't matter if they're, you know, where they stand, you know, if they're a member of the Fortune 500, the Fortune 100, if it's a mom and pop, you know, plumbing shop. Literally any type of opportunity, any type of organization, we can support, because the military community is a hodgepodge of talent. You know, there are thousands upon thousands of military occupational specialties, MOS codes. There's, you know, every military serviceman and woman has a job code, if you will, and for the most part, for every military job that there is a civilian counterpart to it. So, again, it doesn't really matter what the company might be hiring for. It doesn't really matter what the military serviceman or woman might be looking for. We have such an extensive repertoire of opportunities that we can pretty much plug and play any job seeker into just about any organization. So relatively humble beginnings from doing, you know, singular candidate placements. We've helped companies hire CEOs before. We've helped them hire, you know, entry-level positions in some cases and everything in between. So again, the full gamut. So we went from placement services to now all things, everything in the recruiting world, to make sure that we've got opportunities for any military serviceman or woman at any point in time.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like you not only work directly with the veterans, but you also help their families as well, right? I mean, if a military spouse, for example, can go to recruitmilitary.com and get help.
Yeah, absolutely. We consider them to be just as much a part of the community as the actual serviceman or woman. You know, if you think about it, the spouses serve in their own right. When the significant other has to deploy in many cases, and they're deploying for extensive periods of time, it could be a couple weeks to even longer than a year in many cases. Now, the deployment cycles have scaled back pretty significantly because of the strain it was putting on the military family unit. But at one time, you know, it wasn't unheard of for people to be deployed for 18 months at a time. And during that 18 months, many of these servicemen and women had significant others, children, families, et cetera, back home. And it's on the spouse to hold down the fort, you know, back at the home base, essentially. So they are the backbone of the military community. While, you know, we have nothing but love and adoration for, you know, our nation's military, we have to recognize the spouses, because they've played such a pivotal role. So yes, everything that we do is available to military spouses. And the organizations, meaning corporate America, the hiring entities that we're working with, recognize that talent. You know, that's part of the conversation. That's part of the narrative as we're working with these employers to understand what it is that they need to hire for, and you know what the next 6 to 12 months is going to look like for that organization. How many they're trying to hire? What types of individuals they're trying to hire? We're not just educating them on, you know, military MOS codes and backgrounds and how to find these particular types of candidates, but to also help them understand what the military culture is, you know, what kind of work environment they have to structure in order to foster retention, because hiring and retention are two very different things. And again, part of that conversation absolutely includes military spouses. So we welcome them with open arms with anything that we're doing.
Absolutely. I'm glad you guys do that because you hit the nail right on the head. I mean, look, if your spouse goes, you know, disappears for 18 months, and depending on what they're doing, you may not hear from them for an extended period of time. And, you know, everybody kind of holds their breath. You know, military family is, you know, that's a lot of stress. I mean, it's just, you know, it's just like, you know, the families whose spouses are first responders, police officers, firefighters, every time they go out, there is an absolute chance that they will not come back home.
Yeah, that's a very congruent comparison. You know, we there's a lot of overlap there when we look at those two demographics. Yeah, absolutely. There's an inherent risk that just that naturally exists when we're talking in the context of deployment during wartime, even if that individual serviceman or woman is not necessarily a war fighter or within a combat arms, you know, unit or MOS, there's always inherent risk. And, you know, going beyond just the natural threat that is combat and the conflicts that we're engaged in throughout the globe at this point, you know, there's also the consideration of, you know, how frequently these families have to move in many cases. You know, you're talking about as you continue to climb up the ranks in many cases, you're kind of a proverbial ping pong ball, and you have to bounce from base to base, and in many cases you have a new duty station every 12 to 24 months in some cases. And that in of itself puts a lot of strain on the family unit. You know, you gotta pull the kids out of school and you know, go plant your roots again, temporary roots at that, in another market. The significant other, the spouse, is working in many cases, which means they have to abandon a job, a career, in order to continue to move with their significant other as they have to go to a new duty station. So there are a series of strains that the military lifestyle can put on the family unit. So, again, you know, I know the Department of Defense is forever working diligently to try to reduce that strain and to try to make it more, you know, as comfortable as possible. But, you know, at least on the back end, we're going to make sure that we're able to take care of those spouses to the same degree that we can take care of the actual serviceman or woman.
Yeah, yeah. I like that so very much. And it is, you know, it is important. I mean, everybody in a military family is making commitment. Even the children are involved, right? I mean, again, your mom, your dad is out. And even at a young age, kids know that mom and dad may not come back. And anyway, so let me ask you this. What, in your experience, are the biggest challenges veterans face in the civilian career transition, job search?
Yeah, that's that's a fully loaded question, and I'll do my best to unpack it. You know, we're not dealing with hyper unemployment like we were just a handful of years ago. You know, just as recently as 4 years ago, you know, maybe even as recently as 3 years ago, we were seeing unemployment rates for the military community in the double digits in some markets. And on a national level, it was, you know, it hovered around 11 and 12%. And since then, you know, at this point, we're at about 3%. So we're actually, our demographic is a full percentage point lower than the national average, meaning our non-veteran counterparts, their unemployment rate is hovering around 4%, which for the country is still generally a really great thing, because 4% is defined as full employment, meaning there's basically a job for every job seeker. And when we get granular and look at the military demographic, it's a full percentage point lower than that. It's 3%. So unemployment isn't necessarily the item that's plaguing us, whether it comes to the transition or just the military community at large. It's, you know, on the employment side, it's more underemployment, meaning they have a job, but it may not be a career. It may not be the place where they're going to retire from. It may be less than desirable circumstances, whether it be low compensation, shift work that they don't want. But, you know, at that point, in that state of desperation, when unemployment was as high as it was, you take anything. You know, anything's better than nothing. And a lot of these men and women were getting jobs, but they weren't necessarily getting careers. So, you know, now is a really great time. With it being 3% unemployment, that's indicative of high demand for that type of talent. You know, that is corporate America saying through these metrics, we want to hire as many of these men and women as possible. And it goes so far beyond philanthropy or patriotism, altruism. It's not just a feel-good thing to do. Over the last few years, as these organizations have hired these men and women, they've started to understand the business sense that it makes. You're taking a candidate that has leadership experience, that has overseen personnel, millions of dollars of equipment, complex missions, complex machinery in some cases, and they have these soft skills, these intangibles that they're not taught. It can't be taught in school. It can't be taught in college. It's ingrained in you. It's a part of your culture, and that is ingrained in these men and women from day one of basic training or boot camp. And where some of these organizations initially started hiring them because it was the right thing to do, and the previous administration put out a really strong call to action: hire these men and women. They stood on the wall for freedom. They all volunteered. The least we can do is welcome them home with employment opportunities. And some organizations answered that call for that reason, and that's all well and good. We don't care why they want to hire them as long as they want to hire them. But again, that narrative has kind of matured over the last couple years, where these companies have hired these men and women and retained them and ingrained them, or absorbed them rather, into the corporate culture and seen the real value that they represent. I mean, these are not charity cases. These aren't men and women that just need an underhanded softball thrown at them. These are leaders. These are today's leaders, tomorrow's leaders. These are men and women that are running for office. These are tomorrow's CEOs. And again, this narrative has really enhanced. But again, that's really only one part of that. You know, you asked more of a comprehensive question as far as like what is the challenge when it comes to transitioning, and it's different for every person. I think it's subjective. One of the things that I encountered was, a little bit of a struggle when it came to, I don't want to say reacclimating, meaning I couldn't navigate the civilian world. I wasn't a fish out of water per se, but after you have the experiences and the responsibilities that you do, and I'm not just talking about, enduring combat, I'm talking about the camaraderie, all these other things that come naturally hand in hand with military service, and you all of a sudden remove that abruptly and you go back to, the town that you grew up in and the friends that you've come to know over the years, and you try to pick up where you left off, and it's just different. You don't have as much in common with everybody because you've done something bigger than yourself. You've elevated your experience. You know, you're talking to maybe some of your peers that are graduating college around the same time that you were finishing that four-year enlistment. That was my experience. You know, again, I only served for 4 years. We have many men and women that are out there serving 10 years, 20 years, 20-plus years in many cases. And, you know, that this scenario that I'm explaining, I'm sure, is only exacerbated with the, extension of time in service. So, again, I can speak subjectively for what I saw and what I've heard from some of my peers, but it's coming back and just trying to jump right back into society and be, compartmentalize your military service and just drive on. And it can feel mediocre sometimes. You can feel like, I'll never be as cool as I was when I was doing that thing, or I'll never have as much purpose as I did when I was, protecting my men and women. You know, that sort of mentality, and that's something that just takes a little bit of time to be able to shake off and adjust to. And then again, you can find other opportunities to extend that service, being put in leadership roles as you progress through your career on the civilian side, can help you to again regain that taste of of that camaraderie and that esprit de corps that maybe you once had in the military. But you know, I'd say it's the clash of cultures. That would probably be the biggest tricky part. But you know, the easiest way to get past that is to just make sure that you're, you know, you've got a decent support network, whether that's friends, family, being able to partner up with other military veterans, be active in your community, that sort of thing, really helps to remove some of that discomfort or any of those barriers that are perceived as being in your way when you're going through that transition. So on the employment side, again, you know, it's more along the lines of these men and women being able to articulate their experience, to talk about, right, like, this is what I did in the service, and this is how it applies to your company. This is how it applies to the job that I'm looking for. You know, it's not always a one-for-one, apples-to-apples comparison. You know, for myself, I was in the infantry, and if you were to look at equivalence to that job on the civilian side, you know, it's police work, you know, a lot of first responder oriented work, which is, you know, just a fantastic industry and a fantastic group of people that go from service to that, you know, to that line of work. It's an extension of service to their community, to their country. But it wasn't necessarily in line with, say, what I wanted to do. I wanted to, you know, go into marketing. I wanted to go into business, and that required me to further my education, so on and so forth. So it took me a couple years to be able to articulate more of the soft skills that I had, rather than focusing on this was my job in the military. You know, I used to kick in doors and, you know, fire machine guns. And, like, you know, how do you put that on a resume, or why would you want to put that on a resume? You don't. You don't want to, you know, because you don't want to seem like an alien. But to be able to say, I have management experience. You know, I was a team leader and a squad leader at times. I oversaw the welfare, the health, and you know, well-being for my men that I oversaw. You know, I was in charge of, you know, being a part of complex missions or training operations, things along those lines. To be able to hone in and articulate those types of skills is what bridges that communication gap between you as a serviceman or woman and that hiring manager or that talent acquisition representative. So, you know, again, I can give you my perspective, but the most complex thing that I've seen through my experience when it comes to that transition going from one side to the other, it's reacclimating and making sure that you can compartmentalize your experience and talk about it and frame it in a way that takes you to the next place, that takes you to the next step, whether that's professionally, personally, mentally, emotionally, whatever that case may be. I'd say that's the biggest barrier that men and women run into during that transition time.
Sure, sure. Let me ask you this. Do you think, now that you're on this side, as the VP of not talent acquisition, what was it?
It's candidate acquisition. It's essentially, okay, cool. Yeah, how we pull people into our ecosystem and help them connect with jobs. That's, you know, that's the nature of it.
So let me ask you this. Do you think that it's important for, let's say, veterans and or their family members to start creating a digital footprint as part of their transition / career search?
That is a great question, and the answer is overwhelmingly yes. You know, it's 2018, and, you know, I don't need to preach to you, Bert, because I know how active you are. But yeah, these men and women, if for anybody that's listening, if you don't have a LinkedIn profile right now, that's the next thing that you do as soon as this show is over. You go on LinkedIn and you create a profile. It's a digital resume, essentially. It's an opportunity for an employer to understand more in depth who you are digitally prior to you being interviewed. This is a social media platform that is exclusively dedicated to professionalism. You know, it's not Facebook. You're not putting a bunch of pictures of your kids or selfies of you, you know, out on the town with your friends. This is a professional photo. It articulates your previous work experience, your future work interests, your education, all of these things that an employer wants to know about. And it's an opportunity for you as a job seeker, even if you're a passive job seeker, meaning you have a job right now, you're not necessarily hunting for work, but you want to at least be able to be found, it's a great opportunity for you to showcase yourself and build your network, build your professional network. You know, for a serviceman or woman that's going to be going through the transition here now or soon, getting on LinkedIn gives you the ability to actually look at these individual companies, some of their jobs in some cases, and even the recruiters, and connect directly with them. You know, we all want to know, when I hit that apply now button, when I submit my resume, what's next? You know, what happens next? What's the process? What's the follow-up? And every company is a little bit different, you know. So to be able to incorporate more of a digital strategy to your job seeking, you know, to your job acquisition process, it's a force multiplier. It enhances everything that you're doing. It gives you the ability to go directly to one of those talent acquisition managers or hiring managers and say, you know, hey, my name's Sergeant Chris Newsom, and I applied to this position at this location, really looking forward to learning more about the organization and the opportunity. Please advise as to what the best practices are for my next steps. You know, again, it's an engagement tool. Going beyond that, you know, recruit military as well. I'd be remiss if I didn't, you know, if I didn't self-promote a little bit here. Our
yeah, we don't want
database,
to be remiss, man.
I appreciate that. You know, what we do, one of the primary means by which we connect our job-seeking military community with the employers is digitally. You know, it's through their profile that they build with us. We want to know, you know, what's your previous work experience, what's your future work interest, what was your rank, what branch did you serve with, what military schools did you go to, do you still have a security clearance? You know, some of the contractors that we're working with, like Lockheed Martin, Northrop Grumman, they want to know that sort of thing. You know, we work with the NSA, we work with a lot of the alphabet soup government entities, and they're wanting to know a lot of that military-specific information, and you can showcase that via your profile at recruitmilitary.com. But we also go beyond that. We, you know, we're working with a lot of organizations that aren't necessarily in the government contracting realm, and they don't always understand all of the nuances with the military. So, you know, we want to know more things like, are you willing to relocate? What's your education? You know, to just have a very well-rounded understanding of who you are as a job seeker. And through that profile, you're able to link your resume. You upload your resume to your profile, and you can link your LinkedIn profile as well. So you are giving a recruiter the means by which to understand who you are digitally, but very thoroughly. Between your recruit military profile, your LinkedIn profile, and your resume, you're hitting them with that trifecta to help, again, just bridge that gap between who you are as a candidate, so that when you go in and you apply to one of those jobs, they can see who you are in real time.
Right.
You know, they don't necessarily have to wait until they bring you on site for that interview. So having a digital strategy incorporated with your transition, I would say it's pivotal. You can't be without it. If you are without it, you're probably going to be against the ropes, competing with a lot of your peers and your counterparts who are, you know, no other way to say it, but more advanced than you are as
right.
a candidate. You've got to get on the digital bandwagon. It's not a fight to fight. You can't get past it. You know, it just is what it is. It is a structure that exists right now. And as, you know, to put it in terms of an obstacle course, you don't just barrel through the wall, you know, climb over it or go around it. You navigate around that obstacle, and that's what this is. This is something that you simply have to own a little bit, and you have to, if you don't know anything about it, now's the time to learn.
Yeah, yeah. And the reality is like you said, look, we live in a digital world. I mean, a lot of people who are currently employed, who are even happy at their current place of employment, their career track, they every now and then you will have a headhunter who will reach out to you because of your profile on LinkedIn and say, hey, would you be interested in checking out this possible position? And you know, it's an incredible thing. So I agree with you. You must absolutely be on LinkedIn. And I tell you what I love about LinkedIn. Microsoft is kind of reformatting it. They're making some changes, and unfortunately, it would have been nice if they would have made the changes and had them go live. But we are now experiencing all these changes that they're making. It's a great place to upload your skills, and it's also because of LinkedIn Pulse, you can start writing articles. They don't have to be novels, but maybe you write a 1,000 or 2,000 word article or whatever it is, and start talking maybe about your leadership. Because one of the things that that you said, which struck a chord with me, is look, nobody necessarily a civilian recruiter or a CEO may not, unless he's got military background or maybe law enforcement background, may not connect with you breaking down doors and doing this and doing that and jumping out of planes. But what he will connect with is putting a plan together, dealing with unplanned situations. They want to know about your leadership capabilities. They want to know how, if you were, let's say, a cook in the kitchen, how did you prepare to feed, whatever it is, 100,000 people in a day or some of those things that you can translate for the civilian people and say, here are some of my skills, these are some of my experiences, I had to do this, that. And I think LinkedIn is a great place to use that as a spotlight for yourself. You don't necessarily have to be on Twitter and Pinterest and Facebook and all these other places. But I think LinkedIn, man, that could be the place for you.
Yeah, that's very, perfectly said, Bert, because it illustrates another point. You're talking about contributing content. You're talking about writing content and sharing it with your network. That is an opportunity for you to showcase yourself as a subject matter expert. And it doesn't matter what that subject is. It doesn't, in line with what you're trying to achieve professionally, it's an opportunity for you to start establishing your voice. And the more contacts you connect with, the more groups that you participate in, it's a force multiplier. The more you put a megaphone to your mouth and your words and your expertise. So LinkedIn is deadly. I can't picture I can't picture the world without it now, kind of the same way we can't picture the world without a smartphone. Like, how did we ever do this, 15 years ago? Somehow we did it. But now it's like, try walking out of your house without your phone in your pocket and not having a full-blown panic attack. It's kind of the same thing with LinkedIn. If you're not using it, you're not navigating the space effectively or as efficiently as you could or should be. And the same pulls over. You made a great point about being visible, as far as a job seeker for other organizations to maybe see you, even though you have that job. With the unemployment rate being 3% for veterans, 4% nationally, we are seeing some very interesting trends as far as how organizations are now behaving or how they're shifting their efforts in order to compensate for that, or to have a contingency in place for that. So they are resorting to poaching. And again, like I mentioned earlier, I used the word being professionally curious. It's a good time to be open-minded to having some of those communications come across your radar. If you're a salesman or woman right now and you're making, let's just say for the sake of the math, to make it simple, you're making $50,000 a year. That's great. You're able to pay your bills. You're comfortable. But wouldn't you at least want to know if there was another organization willing to pay you to do the same job but to pay you $20,000 or $30,000 more? The answer is naturally yes. But sure, you don't know what you don't know. And if you're not available, if you're not visible, rather, the opportunity could just pass right before your eyes without you even knowing it. So now is a really good time to simply be visible. And, when it comes to Recruit Military's job board, we have that 1.4 million candidates in there, but some of them have been, inactive for maybe a year or more because they've had a job. They have a job. But the thing is, And this doesn't just apply to recruit military. This is any job board that you might be a member of. Monster, Career Builder, name them. You know, it's if you're not quasi-active, and by active I mean just log in and log back out. It could be as simple as that. That is your last activity. These search results operate the same way that Google search results do. So if you're looking for something and you go to Google and you type it in, how likely are you to go to page 10? You know, probably
right.
Not even a chance. You're never going to go to page 10. You're probably not going to page 2. But if you do, that's as far as you're going to go. The same thing happens with some of these algorithms when you're a candidate. If there's a recruiter and they're using one of these search licenses and they go in and they say, I'm looking for my mechanical engineer or my field service tech or a financial officer, if you're inactive, you're populating lower on the totem pole, which means you're less likely to actually be seen. They're going to go for the most recent candidates first because it's the path of least resistance. We read left to right, top to bottom. And that's how this operates. That's how this works with our job board, with any job board. So again, if you have a job but you're open to being poached, if you're open to an organization being willing to pay you more to do the same job, be active. You know, be active on LinkedIn. Be active on the job boards. And again, by active, it may mean something as simple as just logging in and logging back out. LinkedIn's a little more complex. You have to contribute. You have to connect with other people. Be a little more proactive there. But again, when you tie it all together, job board, resume out there, you know, your LinkedIn profile, your job board profile, you're exponentially enhancing your odds of being found. So instead of you having to constantly pound the ground and go out there and knock on doors and hunt down these recruiters, the environment right now is kind of on the other side of the scale. You know, it's tipped the other direction. The recruiters are hunting for you, you know, because you're gainfully employed. It's a target-rich environment, you know, if you're playing your cards right. So again, to close that loop on the digital front, it's essential. You can't be without it.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right, so listen, we're short on time, but I wanted to ask you this. What are like the top three tips you recommend for veterans and military spouses as they search for meaningful and lasting career opportunities?
Great question. I'll be far more brief on this because they're relatively simple points. I'd say number one, take the time to discover what you're passionate about. Figure out what you want to do. Don't transition from the service and then just go to some random organizations and slap your resume down and say, what do you got for me? Take the time to figure out what you want to do. You know, it's if you need to go and do an assessment, you know, use an assessment tool to help you figure out an industry or traits that you should focus on, you know, do that. But you've got to figure out what you want to do. Nobody else can do that for you. And you don't want to necessarily outsource such a pivotal part of your life to somebody else because you're likely going to be served something that, you know, you're not going to be in love with. You got to have that skin equity. So take the time, figure out what you're passionate about. Secondly, I would say do your homework. Do your homework on those organizations. Understand what their industry is. Understand what their corporate culture is. Understand that job through and through. If that job means that you need an additional layer of training, whether it be education or a certification of some sort, make sure you know what you're walking into so that you don't just find, you know, again, that maybe that dream job with Lockheed Martin, but you're not qualified for it. You know, don't put all your eggs in that basket if you're not qualified for it. So do your homework. Make sure that you are an appropriate fit for the opportunity that you're pursuing. And then, you know, third, I'll just echo, you know, for right now, be curious. Be open-minded. Be open to discovering a new route for yourself. You know, most men and women, when they transition from the military, they don't necessarily pursue their MOS, meaning their job they had in the military. Now, in certain fields like healthcare, IT, you know, some of the more technical aptitude roles and responsibilities, yeah, there's a future career for you after that. But in some cases, these men and women are not pursuing that MOS, so they're going to make a hard career pivot and go a different direction, go in a different industry. So be curious, be open-minded right now. Come out and explore what it's all about. See what's out there right now. You know, Recruit Military is running 130 physical career fairs all across the country. Join us. We're doing virtual career fairs, you know, 14 times a year. Join us. Just jump in and see what it's about. It's about networking right now. It's not necessarily that tactical, I don't have a job, I need my job. It's about professional networking. So with that, I would say those are my three primary calls to action to anybody that might be listening.
I love it. I love it. And, of course, you know, we mentioned Recruit Military, and they can go check out recruitmilitary.com. You guys also are very active on LinkedIn and other social media as well. And, you know, it's one of those things where, you know what, it's like anything else. When people decided to get involved in the military, you know, there was a transition. You went from being a civilian to being a paratrooper, and it took time, and it took energy, and it took, you know, commitment. And it's the same thing in reverse now. You have to put in the time.
Yep.
You have to make the investment. You know, one of the
Perfectly
things
said.
That, yeah, you know, one of the things that I've heard over and over again, I've been fortunate enough to speak at some military-related veterans, military, we call it veterans-related events.
Functions, expos,
and,
yeah.
Thank you. And that one of the things that the military provides that most people lose upon leaving the military is the accountability / discipline. Because when your superior is going to follow up with you and say, hey, Chris, or hey, Bert, where are we on this? You know, he wants an answer, or she wants an answer. And there are certain standards that have to be met, and you're expected to meet or exceed those standards. And then, of course, you transition, and those standards don't have to be met, and your accountability isn't maybe as high or as consistent. And this, I think, is one of the hardest things for a lot of people transitioning to deal with. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that's a great – that ties in pretty poetically with, with what I mentioned about that reacclimation, because, again, it's a culture shock. You're yanking away all the structure. You know, you had all of the structure. And again, for many of the men and women that serve for a more elongated capacity, it becomes more and more ingrained in them, that structure, that discipline. But – I want, you know, we need to focus on what the majority of the military is. The majority of the military is enlisted. 85% of all of the military is enlisted, meaning that they were anywhere from a private to a sergeant major in any of the variations of the rank of sergeant. You know, the officers are the lieutenants, the captains, majors, colonels, generals, etc. When the majority of the military is enlisted and the majority of that 85% is only serving within that 4 to 8 year period, because that's the case. 4 to 8 years is the most common contract, if you will, on the enlisted side. You do run that risk when you get out of reverting back to complacency, you know, forgetting some of that discipline, forgetting some of that structure. You know, you don't have somebody yelling at you at all times. You don't have somebody telling you when you're going to eat, when you're going to sleep, when you're going to wake up, when you're going to exercise. You know, when you're gonna do preventative maintenance on equipment or whatever it is that you might do that is your normal daily routine within the military, that's gone. It's all gone now. It's on you to take that extreme ownership, you know, because nobody else is running the show for what happens next. Your destiny it's on you. And again, I really advocate to identify fellow military men and women to pair up with, to just, you know, birds of a feather flock together. I've still got, you know, some buddies from high school, undoubtedly, you know, great friends, but a majority of my peers at this point, you know, are fellow servicemen and women, you know, guys and gals that I either serve directly with, or that's just our common thread. We're military veterans. We have something in common. I never have to worry about that gap in communication when I'm sitting across the table from another veteran. It's a fraternity, you know, or, you know, a sorority, depending on how you want to look at it. It's, you know, men and women, it's all inclusive. It doesn't matter gender, it doesn't matter your branch or rank, you have something in common. You all saluted that flag. So I really advocate to pair up and to make them part of your daily life so that you can retain some of those core competencies to include the discipline and work ethic that you once had, to just make sure that you're carrying that same level of intensity and momentum that you had in the military over to the civilian side so that you can, you know, take your career to the stratosphere or whatever goals you're trying to achieve. You know, I think that, you know, I give a lot of that, you know, the outcome as a result to me being connected with the military peers that I have right now. So some are mentors, some are just friends, but we're all part of a community. So I definitely recommend everybody just become a part of your local military community however you can.
I love it. I love it. Chris Newsom, recruitmilitary.com, recruitmilitary.com. Chris Newsom, thank you so much for stopping by and sharing.
Brett, Ken, thank you enough for having me on. Have a great day.
All right. All righty. Good stuff there. Thanks. From Chris Newsom. And, you know, guys, let's share this episode with everybody. I mean, everybody. Let's share this episode with everybody. Military, non-military, CEOs, recruiters, managers, you know, baggers at the grocery store, with everybody. Let's share this show. As always, my friends, thank you for being here. Thank you for sharing the show. And remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.